Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight number 576 for comics originally released on August 22nd, 2018. Now, starting us off in DC is Terrifics number 7, or The Terrifics number 7. Got to get those articles in there when they're there.
Exactly.
And this is essentially their Fantastic Four title.
Yes.
Over at DC. And they teased for the first arc Tom Strong, and you know what? We actually get him this issue. I was surprised by that.
Tom Strong is here, and he's a new character for me, just FYI.
Okay, I was going to ask if you'd read any of the stuff with him.
No, I haven't read anything with him, but I found out he was created by, I guess, Alan Moore a while back. So he's made like a Golden Age character, even though he's not.
No, he's absolutely not, but he's very much out of that school of thought or whatever. He had his own title. Matter of fact, he had a few spin-off sort of a titles. There was Tom Strong, there was Tom Strong's Terrific Tales, which is kind of an anthology thing, and then there was also the Terra Incognita, or Terra Obscura stuff, I forget which it was, Terra Obscura, I think, which was kind of similar to the Project Superpowers we talked about a week or two back.
And do you like Tom Strong? Are you a fan of this character?
Yeah, and I was kind of pleased that the beginning of the issue was very heavy on him.
Yes.
It was a little odd for the Terrifics to not be in their own book for that part of it, but, you know, hey.
Exactly. You get about a third of the book before you see the Terrifics.
Yeah. And Dale Eaglesham just does a terrific job on the art and stuff.
Yeah, he really does. I was impressed with him. I know he's been in the industry a long time, but his art, top-notch. I really liked him on this book, so he's doing a good job. And I think, I can't remember the starting artist, but I know he's a different artist, but there's no drop-off here in the talent level.
Yeah. Now, with the start of this issue, they start with what turns out to be a page of a Tom Strong comic, and then we flip into somebody reading that, and then we get into the action, which is a Tom Strong adventure. For me, that was a little metatextual. How did that work for you?
It was weird at first. I read it the first time and I was like reading it. I was like, okay, what's going on here? And I kind of breezed through it and I assumed it was part of the same thing. But the second time I was like, oh yeah. So it's odd, but I kind of enjoyed it.
It worked. I took it as kind of like the Fantastic Four have a Fantastic Four comic book in their universe. I took it as that sort of a thing here.
Yeah, exactly. And it didn't bother me at all. I mean, I was just, when I first read it, I was just glancing through it and I was like, oh, the art style changed a little bit. And I didn't even think about, yeah, she's holding the comic book and reading it. I was just like, why did the art style change? And then I was like, oh, yeah, duh, she's reading the book.
Now, you've been reading all 7 issues of this, right?
Yeah, this is, there's 3 of the books, 3 or 4 of the books that I'm sticking on with the all new Age of DC Heroes. And this is one of them I've definitely stuck with. I think this is probably my favorite out of the bunch. This and Damage, just because I'm a Hulk fan.
Cool. I've been reading it the whole time, of course, as I'm wont to do with DC books. Go figure. There was one thing that started to bother me a little bit in this issue.
Okay, what is that?
We've got this Phantom Girl character here, who's not the one from the Legion, but close enough, whatever. And she's stuck in a Phantom state.
Yes.
And it has been for the entire run, and as recently as I've checked, which was Sunday evening when I read the previous issue, still that way.
Yes.
When we get to actually starting to see the Terrifics, we start with Plastic Man, and she, you know, says, hey, we're going to go talk or whatever. And at the bottom of that page, she's, like, pushing a button on, it looked like a Star Trek kind of a pad that's mounted on the wall.
Oh, yeah. Now that you mention that, yeah, I wasn't paying attention to her pushing the button, but yeah, there it is.
Even if you miss that, you go to the next page where we've got Rex, and she's, like, putting her hands on his shoulder.
Exactly, yeah. And her hand's not going through the shoulder. So it's kind of like they're missing the whole intangibility thing. Now, later on, of course, something changes with that status quo. But up until then, this stuff should not be happening.
Well, yeah, because later on, it's suddenly an issue again or whatever. And it was weird. And then when Java comes in, and he's a longtime supporting cast member of Metamorpho and stuff, he seemed a lot less Neanderthalish than he usually does.
Oh, okay. So that I'm not a, I don't have a long history with him, so, but yeah, I can see how that'd be different. Now, what do you take of this losing power thing that's been going on?
One, it's a little similar to what's going on over in Marvel 2-in-1 right now, so I think that's just ironic.
Exactly. I was thinking the same thing. I was like, oh my gosh, are they like playing off each other using the same story point?
Well, and even that timeliness aside, Metamorpho's essentially filling the role of Ben Grimm, the Thing here, and Ben has lost his powers from time to time. So it kind of goes there, too. I did think him getting the ray gun or whatever was kind of interesting.
Yeah, that was kind of cool, and he looks to be a big burly dude, so he can, looks like he can still throw some punches, I guess, in a fight.
Well, and it was nice for them to mention that he can't just go have his life now, because they've all got to stick together, because they're bound by whatever dark matter, whatever it is, that's they go too far and kaboom.
Exactly, and even if you lose your powers, you're still stuck together with these four people, which it's within relative proximity, not right next to each other.
Right, again, they could be like a mile apart or something like that.
Yeah.
Which is something they actually did with one of the incarnations of Firestorm at one point.
Oh, that I did not know. So, I mean, that's kind of like an interesting thing. I like it. It's, I guess, a reason for them to be together, because other than that, there is no reason for these characters to be together. One thing that was also weird in here was seeing, you know, it looked like Plastic Man. He was a little more glum and serious at the beginning of the comic instead of the comic relief that I've been used to.
Yeah, particularly when we first see him, he seems kind of just out of sorts or whatnot.
Exactly, and I like him more like the Johnny Storm of the team, which is what he is. I don't like the Plastic Man comic itself. It's a little bit too much, but in here, I think that funniness is needed. The comedy is relief is needed in here.
Keeping him lighthearted, I think, is the right choice. I agree with you there.
Yeah, it keeps a book the right tone. So I was kind of like, oh, he's off. But he, you know, then he kind of came back a little bit.
But it's like he's putting on a front and a facade or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm hoping they don't try to take him too serious, because that would kind of kill the tone of the book a little bit for me, just because I enjoy that so much.
No, I would agree with you on that.
Yeah. Now, one thing, since this is my first you know, experience with Tom Strong, this was just like something that just kept bugging me. His little helicopter thing.
Yeah.
I'm like, if he had a helicopter like that, he would just be whipping around in circles in the air. There's no stabilization pad. There's no rotor to keep him stabilized at all. I'm like, how is he not just flying in circles all over the place?
It's effectively a backpack helicopter. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, that was just one thing I kept looking. I'm like, where's the rotor that keeps him in place? It's missing.
Well, he's a science adventurer, so there's science that's preventing it.
Ah, that's what it is. The science is preventing it.
Clearly, it's invisible comic book science preventing it, because, yeah.
Exactly. When I get to stuff like that, I look at him like, and I'm like, comic books, you know, you just got to kind of roll with it.
If you like what you see here of Tom Strong and you haven't checked out the America's Best Comics stuff that he was in, I do recommend it. It's a lot of fun.
Okay, America's Best Comics. I take notes as I'm talking to you.
I mean, he's essentially kind of sort of the Doc Savage of that universe.
Yeah, and I did like him in here. Like I said, it was just probably a third of the book that he's really the main character in here. But from what I saw, he's interesting, and I would like to know a little bit more on his background.
Yeah.
And one thing that's kind of weird is, as I'm experiencing all of these characters in DC and being new, sometimes it's so frustrating to read comics. And sometimes, you know, you see those inaccessibility issues, not that this comic's like that. But then what's cool is sometimes I read stuff like this and I go back and I read older stuff. I'm like, oh, man, that guy's been around forever, or that lady's been around forever. Holy mackerel. Here they are back in the 1980s. Same character.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I think there's this misperception that you've got to be able to understand everything the minute you get into any story. And it's like, not really. There's aspects where you've got to make it accessible as a storyteller, but there's also an aspect where, as a reader, you've got to be kind of willing to hit the ground running and to give it a little bit to build up steam and for everything to make sense.
Oh, yeah, because when I first started reading the DC stuff, I was really frustrated, just because I have that long knowledge base with Marvel, And so I start reading a character and I don't even look for those things. But then I get into it and I'm like, man, this is frustrating because I don't know what's going on. But yeah, you almost have to roll with the punches. And then after a while, it's kind of like training with a sport or training with anything in your life. You slowly get better at it and you start going, ah, and it starts making sense.
Well, I mean, when you first started reading Marvel Comics, did you know all of the continuity going in?
Heck no.
of course not.
Yeah. I just forgot about how long I'd been reading them. You know, you don't think about it because it's been so many years.
It's like whenever you start a new job and stuff, you don't instantly know everybody in the company.
Exactly. So, but, I mean, it's been eye-opening doing that with this.
Yeah. Now, what was your take on Doc Dredd here?
Doc Dredd, I wasn't familiar with the character, but he was just kind of shown briefly here and there as the big antagonist here. I don't know a lot about him, but he looked like a cool evil character.
I'm not sure that he's shown up prior to, say, the previous issue of this series.
Oh, okay. All right.
I could be wrong, but I'm thinking he's new. And, of course, he looks an awful lot like Dr. Doom, other than, I don't know, it's more of a red color scheme than green.
Oh, see, when I read stuff now and I don't know who it is, I automatically assume maybe it's someone I don't know about. So I didn't know who he was, but yeah, he looks just like Dr. Doom, except a little little thicker, a little bigger.
Yeah, yeah.
And red instead of green.
Again,
but I'm sorry.
He may exist before, but I don't recall him.
Yeah, I have no frame of reference. He seemed like a cool character, and with this being the quote-unquote Fantastic Four ripoff, it's, you know, par for the course. You got to have a Dr. Doom, and here he is. He looks a heck of a lot like Dr. Doom, and the way his powers seem to work look like Dr. Doom. So, yeah, this is the guy. They're basically recreating the Marvel Universe here at DC.
Yeah. And if they tell good stories with it, it's okay. I don't know that it's, you know, a great move or highly original, but, you know, we'll see where they go.
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely. One thing that I was kind of like, you know, like with this comic, I don't know if I'm where it's going, is kind of like the stuff that happens at the end when you see the, I'm not going to spoil it, but the stuff that's going on at the end and people are losing powers and stuff like that. I don't know if this is a reference to a character that I know about or not, or if this is just a power of that creature or that Dr. Doom ripoff that we were talking about. I don't know if this is one of his powers or if it's something that's tying into a character that I think I might know who it is.
I'm not sure, but I'm hoping we get a little bit of clarity next issue.
Okay. All right. Because I don't know what to make of this. I was like, okay, why is this happening? What's going on here? I mean, it was cool and everything, but I don't know why that's there.
It's funny because I think that sums up a lot of what I'm feeling about this title. There's a lot of that's cool, but I don't know why that's there aspect to it.
Yeah, that was the one thing I really didn't like. I'm like, it just seemed kind of out of the blue that, okay, here's something happening and it's a cliffhanger type ending, but I don't know why it's happening. It makes no sense that it's happening. So that's the part that I could say is a little bit frustrating. Now, one thing I was going to say is Jeff Lemire or Lemire. I don't know which way you say it.
We'll go with Lemire.
Lemire. Okay. He's really into these Golden Age characters and writing current stories with them because, you know, Tom Strong here, and then he's doing the
Black Hammer stuff.
Black Hammer, which is exactly Golden Age characters and revitalizing them and making them somewhat current.
It's Golden Age-ish characters, but I think they were all new creations of his.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They're completely new creations. Yeah. It's just that Golden Age vibe. And I kind of have been enjoying that, so I like that.
Yeah, I just – the problem again I'm having with this is while it's touching on some cool characters, both of the Terrifics and again with Tom Strong here and stuff, the overall plot progression feels kind of slow. It took 6 issues for them to finally chase down Tom Strong.
Yes.
And it's funny because there's plenty of things happening in each issue, but it's almost like, hey, we got to have some action. We got to have some pizzazz and cliffhanger and rinse repeat.
Yeah. This was not one of the better issues for sure. And there's been quite a few issues that weren't, you know, up to par of what I know Jeff Lemire can write. So I know he's a better writer than this. And like I said, some of the things that he's throwing in there, like this stuff at the end, I don't know why it's there. It may be explained next issue, but it just seems like a plot thread that came out of nowhere. And that kind of stuff, it can be a little bit frustrating if it's not tying into the whole story arc and the whole point of what's going on here.
I think it was very much as a hook to get us to get the next issue.
Yeah, exactly. Out of the blue.
And so, to me, that's a little bit of a cheap shot to do, particularly as often as they're doing it on this title.
Yeah, and I'm kind of like disappointed that six issues in, we're already depowering some of the main characters. You know, it looks like there's two of them that are going to be depowered. And I'm just like, I don't know if this is because they're trying to wrap it up and it's going to be ending soon, but it just seems kind of quick to be, you know, already going to that stage. Normally that's something that comes out later on, you know, way down the road with a character. But I think
it's temporary stuff and transient. And again, with Metamorpho, they're just trying to go to those points with, you know, reference those points where the Thing loses his power and it's just Ben Grimm.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So like we've been talking about before with these titles, I think a lot of them, they didn't increase the price because they're going to kind of peter out over the next, you know, 5-6 months. So this will be missed when it goes away, but this is one of the best ones. But at the same time, it's no Fantastic Four.
Are we certain that it's going away?
No, we're not. That's just me assuming. Okay. That's just me. I know a lot of them are. Like, there's one that's been announced. The
Immortal Man, I know, is ending.
Immortal Men was the one, and I think the Unexpected there, I think I heard rumblings that it's going away, but not positive. I think I read somewhere.
And it may well have been announced. I don't really keep up on all that stuff. I can't even keep up on my comic book reading, much less my reading about comic books.
Yeah, that's just been kind of the, I guess you could say, the rumors out there is that the price wasn't increased. It's just try and keep them on for as long as they could, but they're kind of wrap up.
I can understand that. I don't think anybody's going to be terribly surprised by it, but, you know, it's a shame when they get some stuff that's entertaining or whatever and it doesn't last more than about a year.
Yeah, I'm hoping this is the one that lasts a little bit longer because this has been the best of the bunch for me. Like I said, other than for me, Damage. Damage is just kind of like the big guys, the Hulk out.
I just hope some of the characters stick around in some sense and it's not just, yep, we launched them, nobody cared, we moved on.
Yeah, which I could see that happening, and because you separate them out and none of them are that interesting on their own, you know, that where I could see them selling enough to keep their own title. So that I could see happening.
Yeah. For me, I thought this was entertaining in places. The art was good, but I'm getting a little tired of the constant cliffhangers and the lack of overall plot progression. And I was surprised that about half of this was not even really the Terrifics themselves. I enjoyed that half. I like Tom Strong, but I want more out of this title than I tend to be getting. So I'm going with a B- on this.
We were uncannily similar. I actually wrote down C+ to B-, and I was like leaning towards the B- as we were talking. So B- for me as well. That's weird. We have scores that are usually pretty close.
We must be right then. No, I'm kidding.
Yes, that means we're absolutely right and nobody else's opinion matters.
No. And certainly if people disagree, I mean, or have other views, we got the Slack channel and the forum. I like hearing other points of maybe if we had considered this, we'd have liked it better or something. You never know.
Definitely. I like doing that. And I just started reading the thread points. People pull up stuff like we'll say stuff about the Fantastic Four. And there's people out there with continuity genius out there that can pull up references from the first 10 issues of FF. Which is crazy. It's cool. Really cool.
It's awesome. I don't have that kind of memory at times.
Me neither.
Sometimes I can get the trivia stuff. Other times it's been long enough since I've read that first issue or what have you. But yeah.
Definitely.
Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yes, we can.
This is Punisher number 1. Now, this is the new volume. The last volume ended just mere moments ago, I believe.
Yeah.
at least for me, because I had read the last 3 issues of it, like half a trade's worth, just the other night, so I could catch up for this. And it's funny, because this is, in terms of tone, style, and take, I think it kind of surprisingly justifies a new volume and a new number 1.
Yeah.
Because Punisher is now back to that, you know, force of nature kind of aspect versus a true character in the story at times.
Yeah, exactly.
And I thought he was an actual character in the last volume. And I don't mean that as a knock on this one. It's just a very different take to have.
This is a very different take. And this felt very, I don't know for you, but it felt very almost cinematic to me. I felt like I was reading a script or a plot for an action movie. And the action sequences are something that you'd see on a big screen.
It's funny you mention that because I would say it very much feels that way, to the point that in my notes I actually put down, and I'm trying to find the page. It's when we first get Tony Stark here. and he's getting interviewed, I think it was, and he looks just like Robert Downey Jr.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
And I'm like, you know, this is a very Marvel cinematic sort of a thing. You know, he looks and talks like the Robert Downey Jr. version of Tony Stark, not the comic book version.
Exactly.
You know, and there are other aspects, including just the art style, that give it that cinematic tone and style.
Oh, yeah. Like some of the things, like when they have the big action sequence in this book, and a character's being shot, but you view it through like the visor of a motorcycle helmet of someone who's kind of gotten off their motorcycle helmet. That felt like something that I would see in a movie, you know, a certain shot that the guy reflects off the visor and you can see what's going on in the background. That was really cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think they definitely went for a cinematic feel on this. And I did like that. Because the other comic was, like you said, completely, it felt so different.
It did, and I think also one of the other tonal differences here is they really kind of amped up, frankly, the gore.
Oh, yeah. This was like the Netflix series, because I don't know if you ever watched a Netflix series for Punisher.
I have.
That was pretty brutal, more brutal than Daredevil, which got kind of rough. And this seemed to take a page right out of that book as far as, like, the gore, the violence, it almost could have been a Max title if they had a lot more cursing in here. Maybe some nudity.
I could have done without the severed arm. And then there's that gun that shoots the red spheres that make big melty messes out of people.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that was kind of gross. But then we get to the thing that looks like a landmine, and it's Stark Tech of some sort.
Yeah.
And it has these big, giant blue energy balls of skeletonizers, for lack of a better term, because it turns things like birds and people into skeletons.
Yeah.
At least briefly. I'm not sure they stick around long in that state. But, I mean, there was some huge, very, again, cinematic kind of death toll here. And if that's the way they want to go, that's the way they want to go. It's just a very different take than the more almost character-based version. Comparatively so. I'm not saying it was truly totally character-based for the previous volume, but more so than this.
Oh, yeah. When I was reading this and the next book that we're going to review, I was thinking in the back of my mind, I'm like, John's not going to like this that much. Just knowing your preferences, I was like, because I know the gore, the violence, that kind of turns you off. For me, I enjoyed this. I thought it was really cool because amp it up to a 10. I'm cool with that. I mean, we get the Punisher in a tank, which is like, I was just kind of like smiling. I was so giddy when I saw that. I was like, yes, Punisher in a tank.
Well, and they've got some cool moments with that. And this is a character that you're going to have just wanton destruction, property damage, collateral damage. He's not subtle.
Exactly. And with the War Machine armor, you had violence, but it was different. This is more a guy doing this. Almost you could see a character doing this, a human doing this, versus having a suit of armor that's future tech. This was really cool. You know, I don't know why. I like this grittiness, down-to-earth character, street level, but can take it to the bad guys.
Well, and the basic story here is Punisher's declared war on Hydra.
Oh, yeah. Declared war on Hydra. Hydra has kidnapped some people, and it's on.
Yeah, and not a metaphorical war at all. This is a very literal, again, like you said, tanks and stuff like that. You know, so I thought that was interesting direction to go. It's a bit of a change from his war on crime or whatever, but they've earned it. It fits the character, and they've I think, justified it. It's just funny because as over the top as some aspects were, there were one or two things that were just incredibly subtle and understated.
Okay. Wait, what are you referring to?
The cameos by Nick Fury and Black Widow.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
They were blink it and you miss it sort of cameos.
Yes. Just very in the background. Yeah. If you're not looking for it, you won't notice it. Yeah. But it was very cool. I like the characterization of all the characters in here. I like we have Baron Zemo.
Mm-hmm.
We have the Mandarin. And we have high stakes. I will not spoil what happens, but there's something very, you know, impactful possibly to the Marvel Universe that happens closer to the end of this book.
Yeah, things are happening here, and I appreciate that. And I appreciate how they tried to kind of tie the two volumes together with how the previous one ended and this one started. I think they dropped the ball a little bit on that. I was expecting a little bit more presence of Black Widow here and one other character because of how the previous volume ended.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they're telling some interesting stuff here. It's a bit more kind of Marvel Cinematic Universe-ish than the previous volume, and it's a bit darker, gorier than the previous volume, but it's not a bad story.
Oh, it's not a bad story at all. I was entertained with this. This is an oversized volume, so it's $4.99. There's a lot more pages in here. And although there's a lot of dialogue at the very beginning and later on, you have about, I would say, 25-30% of the book that's just this amazing art, over-the-top action sequences that are drawn just beautifully. You know, like for action sequences, it almost looks like screenshots that you would see or setting up a camera to film a movie. You could see this happening.
There were summer blockbuster action sequences here, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. So I was just entertained from cover to cover. And, oh, by the way, Matt Rosenberg is the writer, and Simon Kudransky, I can't say his name. I don't know if he's Polish and that's how you say Simon. I honestly don't know.
It's certainly not how I spell it. It's a very unique spelling, which, you know, hey, that's cool.
Exactly. But he's a very good artist, and I really like this. And like you said, the story was very fulfilling, I will say.
It was a strong start to the series. I think it was fun. It was interesting. Again, I personally could have done without the gore and stuff, but that's something the character is known for, so I wasn't hideously surprised by it.
Yeah, the only ding I would give it is some of the characters, like the faces, for me the art was a tiny bit off, but I don't know if that's because they were going more of a Netflix look or more of a, it just looked like some of the faces were a little bit off. Like that last page, the Punisher's face looked a little bit weird to me.
There were a few things I could nitpick about the art, but overall it tells the story well and gets the job done, so I don't see the real need to it, but I get what you mean about that with his face and one or two other things here and there.
Yeah. It's a very small nitpick, but otherwise, you know, it's right up my alley, something I really enjoyed.
Yeah, it was fun stuff. I'm going to go with a solid B rating on this.
Ah, I liked it more than you. I went with an A-.
You did like it more than me.
Yeah, I mean, but this is right up my alley. You know, I liked stuff like this. I like the next one that we're going to review. That kind of violence and stuff like that is something that I just love. You know, I don't know why. Maybe I'm a sicko, but I just find it very entertaining.
Well, what do you say we hop over to that other one?
Yeah, that sounds good.
This is Die, Die, Die number 2. This is that surprise comic from Kirkman. We'd considered reviewing the first one, but, you know, we pick our books 2 weeks out, and this one just kind of popped out of nowhere.
Exactly.
So, fortunately, I'd read the first one in time to realize when the second one was coming out, and hey, we could pick that, so we did.
Oh, yeah.
I've got, as one would probably expect, mixed feelings on this one, too.
Yeah, I kind of figured you would.
This is, it's almost a schizophrenic book in some respects. I mean, I could have done without the guy's nose being cut off. I could have done without the blatant carnage. And there are a couple of places where we see a character and then thunk, he's getting killed. And it's like, well, that was fast.
Yeah, it's almost like there's black humor or dark humor in here. Because you have these characters, they're just introduced and boom, headshot, boom, headshot. And it keeps happening. And then I'm like, this is actually kind of funny. But you have to have that dark sense of humor.
It's a dark sense of humor, but it's also a little adolescent at times in that respect.
Yeah. It definitely is. This is more of a 19-year-old James laughing my head off at this stuff.
And again, I'm not casting judgment there, but what's surprising to me is there is a really interesting story hidden behind the excessive violence, the over-the-top surface level kind of flash and glitz and, you know, wow, isn't this kind of rad and cool and awesome or whatever. It's like, if they had actually toned it down and instead of having this cranked up to like 15 or 16 or something and dialed it back down to be a little bit, I don't say more subtle, but less gratuitous. We've got a basic story here where the three identical triplet sons of an assassin realize their dad's an assassin. So, hey, he trains them and they become assassins. Okay, interesting. But apparently they've had a falling out over the years, and this is kind of dealing with their current situation. And when you've got identical triplets, you need ways to make them look different.
Yes.
Okay, one's got longer hair, you know, one's a little more clean cut. But hey, you know what? That's not enough. Even different colored shirts isn't enough. Let's cut the nose off one of them, because that'll make him stand out. Isn't that awesome?
Yeah, you're the pig nose one.
Like, that's disgusting.
It really is.
And just the level of carnage on this, I mean, this reminded me of kind of like a shock jock radio kind of host or whatever.
Yeah, you know what I was thinking? I was kind of getting the feel. I felt like Kirkman and Chris Burnham decided they were going to do something like Mark Miller. I always say Millar because it's spelled like that. But, you know, it's almost, you know how he amps it up with his books on the violent side? This felt like his take on that.
I think it was intentionally over the top for the sake of being over the top.
Yes. I think it was very intentional to be just crazy violent.
What I like, though, is even in the places where it's not over the top, it's got some, I don't say wit to it, but it's got some thought to it and some cool things. Like when the one guy is getting the photos of the castle and getting his intel, and he's like, nobody can know I'm here. And the girl is giving him the inference, I completely understand. He's like, no, you don't. And I'm like, I can see where this is going. and it goes there, but it did it in a satisfying way. And regardless of how over the top they did or didn't do the action and stuff, there's a sense of storytelling style to that that not all comics have.
Yeah, and that strictly comes down to Kirkman is a really good writer.
It is, but I think that can get lost behind the gratuitous gore and sex and over-the-top action.
Yeah, because you're exactly right. There's two types of books. Like this, I could see like an Avatar-style book. I mean, although the art's better than a lot of the Avatar books. But if you go too over-the-top and you don't have a story, it's not that satisfying, even though it may be cool to the reader who likes that kind of stuff. If you have a really good story with no violence, you're going to, you know, have a different audience. He's trying to say, I'm giving you a great story, and I'm going to give you this crazy violence, Mark Miller type stuff, Avatar type stuff, and see, you know, who bites, who likes it. And, you know, maybe because there's nothing like this out there. I can't compare this really to anything. It's hard, other than Mark Miller and some of his works like Hit Girl and
have you ever read The Boys?
I did read The Boys. That was pretty rough too.
This has a similar sensibility.
Yes, this could definitely be like The Boys. Garth Ennis, and I read that in the singles and I really liked it.
I mean, what I like here is things are happening and the story is moving forward.
Yeah.
And then there's intrigue. It's like, well, why did this character do that? Clearly there's a reason. I want to know what it is. Now, again, I'd have been happy if all the nose cutting, the severed limbs, and all this kind of stuff just wasn't here. But I get that he's also trying to cater to that kind of an audience. I appreciate that it's not just over-the-top action, that there's actually an underlying story here. And the fact that it seems to be circumventing the entire solicitation cycle is potentially to its benefit. Because conceivably, it could get to a point where it's just, boom, story ends.
Yeah, it's so weird that the issues keep coming. And, you know, Eric's been pulling them for us. You know, basically, it's like old school. We have a pull list and we don't know what it's like until we get the cover because it's never in previews. And you get to see this cool cover, which kind of describes old-fashioned comics, what's going on. You look at the picture. So it's such a cool feeling and I like it, but like you said, this—if you have a weak stomach, or you do not like gore, or you do not like kind of raunchier sex—and it's not very graphic at all. But I mean, just the innuendos and stuff. This is not going to be a book for you. But if you can look around that stuff, this is a really cool story, and it's still and very entertaining. If you're not a fan of those things.
Yeah, it is entertaining. It seems like they've been working on it for the last year or two, so I'm sure there are plenty of issues to come out. But if they stay off kind of that pre-solicitation thing, it means they can do some twists and turns that we can't see coming because we've got no way of seeing them coming. That having been said, if you've ever looked at the solicits for Walking Dead, it's the cover and like two, maybe three words.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like on this cover, did you want to tell them what it said on the cover? Or?
Let me go back to the cover for just a sec. I mean, this was basically it saying, oh, crap, or holy crap, that guy's nose is totally cut off. Skybound approved. It's like it's reveling in its lack of subtlety.
Exactly. It's over the top on purpose, just trying to be like the big action. Look what you get inside, and you see the guy with the pig nose cut off on the cover. It's really... This is something, my dark humor side came out. I find stuff funny sometimes, dark humor.
My question to you, if this had been in previews, would this cover and say the tagline or the solicit of, holy crap, that guy's nose is totally cut off, skybound approved, would that have made any difference? Does it need to be a stealth series?
I don't think it needs to be. I mean, most of the comics readers are adults out there. I mean...
This is targeted to adults. I think it's targeted to mature reader kids.
Mature reader kids, yeah, like teens. 18, 19, 20s. I don't know. I don't think it would have... The title is Die, Die, Die. I don't think it would have done anything. I think he's doing this just to bring back that mystery that used to be out there with comics. Like, if you think back to when we were kids, you didn't know what was coming out until you showed up, and what was on the shelf was on the shelf. And you picked what you liked based on the covers because, at the convenience store I went to, they wouldn't let me flip through them. And you just kind of rolled with it, Oh, I like this thing. That looks cool.
I guess my point is the way he solicits things like Walking Dead, it's kind of not that far from that.
Yeah, it's true. Not far at all. I think he could put this in previews. He might actually increase the sales, but I honestly don't know at this point. I know originally it was based off whatever they ordered from Oblivion Song. They got that many issues of this title. I don't know if the retailers are ordering them now or if they're just still shipping out, here's how many you got of Oblivion Song, here's how many you get. I don't know what's going on with this title, and we still can't order it other than telling Eric, hey, I want this.
From what Eric was saying on Slack or whatever, it sounded like it might just be going through the final order cutoff process to where retailers have a chance to do a little with it, but trying to not be in front of the consumers.
Yeah, keep it a mystery to us. And so it's kind of interesting because you have to go into it blind and just say, I want this cool thing. And I like that. But like you said, if he put this in previews, he probably would actually sell maybe a few more copies, especially DCBS customers or those real heavy pre-orders.
Yeah, I don't know that this is as radical of a thing as, as he's making it out to be. It's
a marketing ploy.
It's a marketing ploy. He's pretty good about not spoiling his own stories. As a matter of fact, he's excellent about that.
Yeah, Walking Dead, you get two words or three words, and that's it.
Yeah, so if he wants to do it this way, that's fine, but I don't know. I think it's going to be interesting to see how this goes. It's an interesting experiment, but I don't think it's like this radically great thing that circumventing previews is making this a better book or not. You know what I mean?
No, I know exactly what you mean. I mean, actually, possibly could hurt it a tiny bit because I don't know people walking into a shop looking at this. This is going back to Teen James. I would have saw this cover and been like, yes. But, maybe 40-something-year-old James, and by the way, I don't have kids, but if I have kids and I'm walking in with my wife, I'm not going to pick this thing up, But
This is the epitome of not kid-friendly.
Exactly. You can't even leave this really out on a shelf if you're going to have young people, at eye level for kids can see this. You really don't want them looking at this.
To its credit, it says very blatantly on the cover, mature readers. Not hidden on the back, not hidden in the price thing. So I give him credit for that, too. He's being reasonably responsible about this. However, yeah, this is the exact kind of book that, again, I forget how long ago the stories were, where there was a store in Texas that, because it was physically located near a school, had some... a police officer walked in there wanting to shut the store down and saw this, they'd have said, you can't have this material this close to a school and caused problems, legal problems.
Yeah, I could see that because this is pretty gruesome. Even the picture on the front's pretty gruesome. So, yeah, definitely not kid-friendly stuff. Like I said, I like it just because I like dark humor. I find comedy in people being shot in the head multiple times when you first meet them. To me, that was funny.
There were a few times where it's like, I see it coming, there's a humor to it, but then there's a matter of it's happening so damn often in this book.
It really does. I was like, okay, it's kind of comical that at a certain point, I'm sorry, I'm trying not to laugh, but yes, it could also be irritating.
It's not so much irritating so much as I think it may lessen the shock value.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's kind of banking on that to a certain degree.
Yes, it definitely is. It really is.
But, I mean, it's an entertaining book, even if it's visually a bit kind of disgusting to me. He's telling a fun story. He's given it some thought. They're giving it a good amount of effort and a good showing for it. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, me too. And I'm sticking with it just because even though, you know, we talk about all the gruesomeness and stuff, it is a decent story behind all this and intertwined in all this. So it's entertaining to read as well as all the other fun stuff that you get.
It's got me curious what's going on with these brothers.
Yes, me too.
There's
me
a deeper too. Story that I'm curious about.
I agree. So yeah, I'm hooked. I'm on board for the 10, 12, or 300 issues that this is going to come out with.
I don't see it lasting 300 issues because with the death toll, I don't think this world is that well populated.
Exactly.
Although it would be hilarious for them to take a story like this and just keep going until it's like, damn, we're out of people.
Exactly. Yeah. It was funny. It was, oh, I gotta quit saying that, but it made me laugh a few times.
It definitely did what it set out to do. For that, I'm going to give it a B+. Hard for me to give it a higher rating given some of the stuff that I found kind of distasteful. And there are there are tons of aspects of this that lack subtlety, but it's not trying to be subtle.
Yeah. And with this is my second A- of the night. I really enjoyed it. Good story. And I don't mind the over-the-top violence because it's something that makes me chuckle the way that it was done.
Oh, yeah. And again, not in my wheelhouse in that respect, but I'm liking the story enough to keep going with it.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm kind of happy with it. So I'm going to keep getting it. And so what's funny is stuff that's happening right now, it's like all my nostalgia. I'm usually not a very nostalgic person. I don't wax fond about the old days, but it's starting to happen to me. I don't know. Maybe I'm because I'm turning 45 this year, but this stuff is reminding me when I was a teenager, stuff that I used to love. And then, you know, all this Conan stuff coming out. I've been watching the Conan movies, Conan the Barbarian and the Destroyer, because I'm so excited for the Conan coming back to Marvel that's coming out in 2019.
No, that's cool. That's cool. And there's a lot of stuff that you got hooked on as a kid and you want more of. And if there's something that's either doing more of it or at least promising more of it or gets you back in the mood, I totally get that.
Yeah, so I made my wife watch the old Conan movies with me over the last few days, so it was kind of fun.
Cool.
Yeah. So what have you been up to lately?
Let's see. I've been recording some episodes because you may have heard I'm going on a vacation soon.
Yes, I have.
I've been editing some episodes because you may have heard I'm going on a vacation soon. To do some of that, I've been watching some TV shows. Like we talked about earlier, I've watched the Netflix Punisher season 1. I've got an episode I've recorded on that I've also – I'm trying to remember if that one's gone up or not. I've edited it at the very least. But I've got a backlog of numerous episodes that I'm kind of in various stages on. So there will be an episode on that coming out, as well as, let's see, what else? Second season of Jessica Jones, second season of Luke Cage, although I haven't edited that. Plenty of stuff like that. Have not really been making serious progress on my reading, though. I'm hoping to get a free weekend or two coming up in September to make a dent in that.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, not to ruin your Luke Cage review, but just out of curiosity, do you think that could have been shortened down several episodes? Did it seem like it went too long?
I'm starting to feel that about a number of the Netflix shows.
Yeah, it's like the 10 issue or 10 episodes, but it's like, man, a lot of them, I'm like, man, I would have enjoyed it so much more if they would have done it in 5 or 6 because there's just so much filler in there.
Well, I think part of it, and my sister and I talk about it, is it feels like they've got a regular network hour of TV, i.e. 42 minutes or whatever, but they expand it to the full hour.
Yeah.
And there's some stuff that it's entertaining. It's good scenes. It's the actors are doing great with it, but is it essential?
Exactly. I think it's becoming a little bit overwhelming. And when I watch it, I'm like, okay, it's just too much. It's like, which is weird to say that, but I'm like, either shorter episodes or fewer episodes, one of the two, because it just seems like they're a little bit too long for me right now.
Well, and I think Iron Fist is only going to be 10 episodes.
Oh, okay. Which will be good.
And that drops on, I think, September 7th.
Oh, so coming up really soon.
Or 8th or something like that. Yeah, soon.
Wow, they should have dropped that over Labor Day. They probably would have had more viewers, people who maybe can't get out of the house and don't have anything to do over the long weekend.
Yeah, all right. And then I think the third season of Daredevil before the end of the year, but I'm not sure.
Well, looking forward to that. Well, just so you know, I've been doing reading to get prepared for maybe some books that we review next week.
Cool.
Yeah, so, no, I actually went back to the 80s and read that Infinite Crisis, or no, Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Crisis on Infinite Earths, that's the
yeah,
one.
Yeah, I'm going to keep saying it wrong. I keep butchering the name, but very weird to go in that time bubble back to the 80s when I have not been reading DC all that time, because, you know, the characters look so 1980s, you know, the costumes are,
oh, yeah.
Or even 60s and 70s, you're like, oh my gosh, is that the way the characters look? You're like, oh yeah, I guess that's how they looked with the big collars and everything. But it was really a cool read. I really liked the intro by Wolfman to see, you know, how it all came about. That was probably one of my favorite parts, seeing why it came about.
It was Crisis on Infinite Earths was a massive turning point for DC. If you're a DC fan and you haven't read it, I do think you should check it out. It is just a broad, epic saga. Some parts of it work better than others. I find it enjoyable. I reread it a number of years ago, and it held together well. I've got the absolute of it.
Yeah, it's like certain things I can read in there, and I'm like, wow, this is very 1980s. You know, the phrases and words that people use. I'm like, people don't talk like that anymore. But other things, yeah, it's held together very well, and it's an entertaining story. So I enjoyed it. It was weird because they used so many D-list characters. I'm like, who the heck are these people? What is Earth S and Earth X? What is this?
They tried to touch on just about every corner of continuity they had.
Yeah, kind of crazy. It's massive. I guess it was really confusing back then trying to get into all that stuff.
Not really. I mean, it was one of those things you didn't need to know who everybody was to get it. It's like, well, there's somebody here. I mean, it'd be like watching an action summer blockbuster film and not recognizing every extra in the crowd scene.
Yeah, that's true, because it didn't ruin the story, me not knowing who those people were. There was just a lot of characters. I was like, I've never seen those people before, but, you know, just kind of roll with it.
To me, it was a brilliant series and simultaneously one of the best and worst things DC's ever done.
Really? One of the best and the worst?
I think it was just an epic saga and was a true event comic.
Yes.
And it did some great stuff there. So in that respect, I think it was the best. However, the ongoing damage it did to the continuity of DC is still being felt now 30 years later in various ways.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's true because they literally took characters off the table for years and years and years, and stuff is, and I guess it was a trilogy because they came back with Infinite Crisis and Final Crisis or something like that.
It wasn't a trilogy. There were sequels.
Sequels. Okay. Jeff Johns did one and somebody else, I think Grant Morrison did another one.
Yeah.
Yeah, so those I may have to read to see how maybe they tried to fix or tweak or, I don't know, do stuff on their own.
Infinite Crisis was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed that. Final Crisis, I thought, was a bit incomprehensible in places.
So is that the Grant Morrison one or the Jeff Johns?
The Grant Morrison one is the incomprehensible one.
Yeah, Grant Morrison writes a lot of incomprehensible stuff.
He does, and I'm just saying that as somebody who at that point had been reading all of, well, maybe not 100%, but like 95%+ of DC since Crisis on Infinite Earths and quite a few years prior to that. So it's not like I didn't know the then current continuity.
Yeah. Well, on the forums, Perseus, Don, he was telling me to, or he was asking me to read it. You know, he's like, hey, let's read this together. And he was reading it. And I was like, I'm so backed up. I really can't. I got to get caught up on my singles at the time is when I was really backed up. But I'm happy I read it. And I feel like it's given me more appreciation for the DC universe. And I think it's prepared me for what you've been telling about with the Power Rangers.
I hope so, because I think thematically what they're doing is surprisingly similar to Crisis. But instead of doing this epic story that's bouncing from place to place to place, they actually managed to keep it big yet centered and personal.
Yeah, so I'm interested to see, and like I've never been a Power Rangers reader, or I've seen it on TV a couple times, but just because other people were watching it, not because I was watching it. So I'll be completely new to this, newer than I am to DC. And I'm interested just to see, now that I have that frame of reference, to look at it in that, hopefully, scope and go from there.
Yeah, because I think it's going to be fun to review the end of the Shattered Grid storyline, because I think what Kyle Higgins has done has been really good, and he's basically doing literally a comic book version of Power Rangers, i.e., what would they be like if they were a comic book superhero team, not the TV superhero team?
Oh, which would be cool. That's a cool take on it.
It's just like how the movies are doing a movie version of the Avengers or whatever, not the comic book version.
And there's a lot of differences there. A lot.
Neither's better nor worse. They're just different lenses to look at the characters through.
Yeah. Well, I'm interested to read it. I'm looking forward to it. So hopefully it ends up well, you know, or good, the outcome that you would like, or something exciting for you.
I hope it lands the ending, because there have been many events of various publishers that were doing good up until it's like they ended there. Jeez, man. So we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, let's hope. Keep our fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Yes.
So let's see. Coming up, we've got the preview spotlight deadline on September 8th. That is the deadline for both the September previews spotlight and the October previews spotlight. As we mentioned before, September, we're doing the regular clips, do one clip per item, put the page number, all that kind of stuff. Instructions are on the forum for how to do all that. We play them in basically the order they would show up in previews, diving into the Marvel and DC previews where they would slot into the main previews. October, we're changing the format for that month because, hey, I'm going on vacation. This is the first time in 10 years of doing the preview spotlight that I've actually had to either change the rules or risk canceling the episode. So I think I'm due.
Yes, you are.
But for those, it's one clip per person for October, answering the question of what current titles should people be reading and why. Recommend as many titles as you want. Don't post those titles you picked on the forum. Let's let it be a surprise for the listeners. And if you've never sent in a clip for the preview spotlight, this is a great chance to do so. You don't need previews. You just need to look at what you're reading, what you're enjoying, and pitch those to us and say, hey, we should check them out, try them because they're awesome or whatever. You know, if you like this, try this, or I love this artist, you should try it, or, you know, whatever. Why do you love those books? Why should we give them a shot? That's really what it comes down to.
Cool.
There's no excuse not to send a clip in.
Definitely.
And then for those, just name them October dash and your name so I don't accidentally put them in like the September one. Could happen. And for the October one, I'm just going to play them in the order received.
That'll be cool, and it should be really easy, and the naming convention works perfectly.
Pretty simple and straightforward, I think. So hopefully we'll have a good turnout for that. I'm looking forward to it.
Me too.
And then we're going to have the Comic Book Page monthly teleconference Saturday, September 15th, whereas the deadline for the preview spotlight is bright and early the morning of the 8th. The teleconference, obviously, is much later in the day. We do that at 7 p.m. Central Time. Again, that's September 15th. And we're not going to have one in October because, well, I'm not going to be around to coordinate it. So, you know, if you all want to talk on Skype, have at it. But that'll be the teleconference for September, and then we'll start that back up in November, probably.
Cool.
So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
That does it for me.
Cool. Join us next time as we discuss Lex Luthor, Porky Pig Special Number 1 from DC, Hunt for Wolverine Dead Ends Number 1 from Marvel, and Mighty Morphin Power Rangers Shattered Grid Number 1 from Boom Studios.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.